Hey everyone, welcome to the podcast. And today we've got a guest who goes by many names in our reselling community. He lives in New York and we're going to find out what it's like reselling and thrifting in the Big Apple.
Hey, I'm Carboot Chris. I'm a full-time UK online reseller. I operate mainly on eBay and also Whatnot, but also some other platforms as well. I'm going to bring you regular podcasts all about reselling, hopefully to keep you company, to entertain, or maybe to educate. Who knows? Welcome to the Everything Reselling Podcast.
Hello and welcome back. It's series 2, episode 9 of the podcast. I appreciate you being here, whether you're watching live on YouTube or you're listening back on Spotify, Apple, Alexa, Google, whatever, I don't know. Wherever you're listening to this, thank you so much for listening. I'm a full-time reseller. My name's Carboot Chris, and I operate mainly on eBay, but I also operate on Whatnot as well and some other smaller platforms. And we do these podcasts. We chat to different people in the reselling world, all over the world, actually. And we just find out how people do stuff and we just chat about reselling things. So thank you for joining us. And today we have a special guest from New York City. And we're going to find out all about thrifting in the Big Apple, one of the biggest cities in the world. Should be interesting. And we'll bring him on now. He goes by many names and we're going to find out which one he prefers. Here we go. Hey, Rob.
Hello, everybody. Hello, everybody in YouTube land. It's, I guess today I'm Bob. I could be Bob. Well, usually, I'll make that story short. I changed different jobs, and when I was, I used to own a restaurant, and the restaurant was called Bobby's. And then when I went back, and then unfortunately, when the business folded, I went back to my old job, and in the restaurant business, and there was already another guy in there named Bobby. So then I had to go back to Rob, which I was many years before. So a lot of people, they know me by different names. And, I'm not very hung up on that. Like if somebody calls me Bob, they call me Rob.
You've got all kinds of names. Cause I actually wrote them down cause I thought, which one's he going to prefer? Cause I've got Rob, I've got Bobby, I've got Krillin, I've got a long story short, I've got Bob's Blazers. Yeah. Well, which one shall I call you?
And I was always told you should keep one name, but then I'm just kind of all over the place.
I think you need to streamline your branding a bit and just be known by one thing.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I know that's
Rob. I'm just gonna call you Rob.
Perfect.
Do you want to introduce yourself? Tell us sort of, you know, what you're about.
Okay, I'm Rob, and as Chris mentioned, for the sake of transparency, I'm just outside of New York City, because I know a lot of people, they're gonna think New York City, they're gonna think Times Square, and they're gonna think of Well, I know you went to Rosie O'Grady's, right? Isn't that where you went?
Yeah, we did. New Year's Eve. Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah. So that you're going to think of Rosie O'Grady's. You're going to think of Times Square. You're going to think of that. That's particularly just Manhattan. I live, let's say there was no traffic, because obviously there's traffic all the time. But I live about, I want to say, 30 to 40 minutes east of New York City, which I know people sounds crazy because New York City is on the water. So how could you live east of it? But I live on a place called Long Island, and it's Long Island. And I'm sure people are not interested in the history lessons, but if they are, most of it is named after British towns. Like if you ever heard of the Hamptons, you know,
yeah, I have actually, there is some British sort of name towns, isn't there?
Well, it's all British. It's like that part is called Suffolk. I know you have either a county or a city named Suffolk. One of the towns that I go to that I do sourcing in is called Huntington. I know you guys have a Huntington. So they all, you know, I don't get into the whole history of it, but obviously, as you know, you know, New York was a British colony, so, you know, right. British and Dutch. So some places have Dutch names, some places have British names, and then some places have the indigenous Native American names.
Yeah.
So that's basically where you, so because you'll say like, what's a Massapequa? And you're gonna say, you know, but that's the name of a town. But that was just that's a obviously not a British English name. That's a, like I said. So I'm from just outside of there. I do at times go into New York City proper. Never into Manhattan to source for merchandise, because you really have to know what you're doing to go, you know, but we call the outer boroughs. I'm sure people have heard of Queens and Brooklyn. I'm sure people have heard Brooklyn, you know, that's a they call it a borough. I don't know if you guys use still the same things,
but it's where New York City FC is around there, isn't it?
New York City FC, I believe they were playing in Yankee Stadium in the Bronx.
Is that close?
No, it's not. Oh. On a map, it's close, but it could be a 2-hour commute. Not, you know, it's in the Bronx.
Yeah, we've been
Yankee
there.
Stadium?
It felt like it was a bit rough.
I'm not going to get offended. It's Bronx. That's like the definition of rough, you know?
Okay. Yeah. That's... I mean, when we got off the tube to go to the stadium, because we did a stadium tour at the Yankee Stadium, and we kind of looked around and thought, like, we're not snobs or anything, but we looked around and thought, I think we'll just stick to the stadium, you know? We weren't going to have a wander.
Absolutely. It was, you know, I mean, it was, you know, Yankee Stadium. I mean, it is, and it's 10 times better than it was when we were kids. It was worse, if you could believe it. You know, in the 70s and 80s, it was very, very rough. But, you know, that's what, of course, my parents really ain't gonna take us there. We went to go see the crosstown rivals, which were the Mets. Which is in a little bit better of an area, you know, but it's that would be in Queens, and they're connected. Okay. Queens, you know, you can kind of look at the map. I know when talking about the logistics, it's kind of complicated. You know, it's not like grids, but definitely is. But I there are some thrift stores in Bronx that I'm curious about going to, but they're difficult. You know what I mean? Because you gotta know where you're going. You know.
Mm.
And you want your car to be there when you get inside.
Just a quick thank you to Ryan. I think Ryan has dropped me a super chat or something there. Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate that. Really appreciate it. Rob, so you've got a typical, what I would call a typical accent of a New Yorker, right? So have you lived in New York all your life?
Yes, I've lived here all 44 years.
And how long have you been reselling then? And what did you do before reselling? You have touched on it slightly.
Sure. Okay. Before reselling, I was working in the restaurant business. I was a bartender. Oh, there's my buddy. There's Scotty from California.
The Diver Dad. Welcome.
Yeah. Yes. He was my co-hosting partner in the other show. Before reselling, I was working in a restaurant. I was a bartender. I was a bartender, I was a bar owner. But when I had lost the business in 2008, I had gone back to college, which was a regret of mine, not finishing getting my college degree.
Okay, right.
But I went back to college after you know, I closed up shop. But I went back to my bartending job, but then I was doing part-time bartending and part-time college. I was getting my degree in accounting. I know it's not very exciting, but I just was, you know, I figured I need to take something. And I ended up finishing that. But then subsequently, I had found some videos on YouTube, people reselling. I had originally in 2001, maybe. maybe even late 90s, early 2000s. Okay.
Right.
Even before I got into the restaurant business, I used to buy and sell cars.
On eBay. And okay.
Yes. So
that's early eBay days, because eBay's 96, I think, did they start? That's pretty
early. This was very early eBay days. I didn't even have PayPal. I would have to, they would mail me a check, and then I got to wait for the check.
There was a company called No Checks. Remember, I don't know if you remember that or if you had it in the US, but we had one called No Checks. It's a bit like PayPal. It's kind of an incarnation of PayPal. Hey, sorry to interrupt. I just want to say thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I hope you're enjoying it so far. Don't forget to subscribe. And also, we're over on YouTube, Cookie and the Haydens, or just search Car Boot Chris on YouTube or Instagram too. Join me there as well. In the meantime, let's get back to it.
Yeah, I would wait for the check. And then once it would clear, I would, message them back and say, okay, you can come pick up the car.
Oh, right.
And then I had some crazy stories with that. But see, because what happened was, I'll make it short. We used to be able to sell what's called open title cars, meaning I would buy a car from somebody, like a damaged car, right? Something that, the hood or the door is damaged, whatever it is. So I would buy it at a heavy discount.
Yeah.
And then me and friends of mine, guys who I knew in the business, we would repair it, cheaply, because we all knew people who had parts, and because when you're in that business, I'd get the parts cheap. And,
yeah.
I mean, I was never a master mechanic, but I was handy. I know how to use basic tools, and I had other friends that would help me out, whatever, whether it was paid, they would do it cheaply, or people I know, friends would help me out. And then, so I would be listed on eBay. And now when you sold it on eBay, like I said, I would sell open title. So what would happen is I'm buying it from person A, the car. And right. Now on the title on a car, it has, the seller's name that's okay. Actually printed on it. Yeah. And then on the bottom, you would have you would write your name in, and yeah. Then you bring it to, whatever. But what I would do is I would just keep it blank. So I would sell it on eBay. And then now the new guy coming to buy it, he would be the one to fill out buyer. Because see, you don't want to have to fill it out, because you don't
want
to fill it out.
Now
you
have to be owner, do you?
Well, it's not about extra owner per se. It's about once I sign it, now I have to pay taxes. I have to pay fees. I have to, and in order for you to sign, now I have to have insurance for the car. Because what I would do is I would just keep the car like in a back driveway with no insurance, because I wasn't driving it around, so I didn't need insurance. But yeah. With this, then eBay changed the rules. Well, years later, that you're not allowed to sell open title cars anymore. So it makes it really difficult. You have to be they make it hard. Which is fun. Things change.
Change the rules, don't they? So you sold cars, and then you went into the restaurant industry. Can we ask how did it? It didn't end well in the restauranting, did it? So how did it? What happened? Can we talk about it?
Sure. So I was working, like originally. I'm leaving high school, and we graduate high school in America at 18 years old. Finished high school. And then I went to a community college. Ironically, the community college which you had a Nassau County Bears jacket.
Oh, yeah.
Ironically, yeah. I mean, you have to understand it's a small local college. It's not like a large university. Like it's so I even at the thrift stores now I couldn't find them, But I went to that school. Because I didn't know what I wanted to do. It was a local school, whatever it was. So I started, I started taking some accounting classes, and I was doing okay. So I was like, all right, I'll stick with this. And then subsequently, when I was working in the restaurant business while I was doing that, I had other people who wanted to get into business. They're like, oh, I'm going to open up a place and do this and whatever it is. And when you're 18, 19, 20 years old, you have a lot of energy, you have a lot of ambition, you have a lot of everything. So I had hooked up with one guy who was working around the corner at another bar restaurant that we used to go to after work. And his name was Joe. And he was in his 40s and I was in my 20s. So we figured the partnership would work well because he had the experience and I had the energy. But then we found a location and then we put deposits that, you know, a guy who was looking to retire, one restaurant owner. So we were going to buy the restaurant from him. We had gone through a whole processing to get, because, you know, you need license. I'm sure in UK, you can't just sell liquor. I'm sure you need a license for the liquor.
Yeah, you got to have a license, yeah.
You got to have license. So we went through these processes. You had to get the licensing. You had to do all this stuff and everything. And then kind of at the last minute, my partner backed out. He was remarried in his 40s. And his wife kind of said, you know, whatever it was. And he said, you know what? Place is kind of small. Might not be enough business for the two of us, you know, not enough room for the both of us. So I was still, first of all, I was upset because we spent all that money on the fees and all that stuff and all that time and the time looking around at different places, whatever it was. So make the story short, but he knew more of the back of the house, meaning the back of the house is the kitchen and everything. Yeah. Front of the house is the dining room because I had always worked in the front of the house with the customers directly, not in the back.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was one of the biggest mistakes because I didn't really know the back of the house. And then I made a lot of, and then once I just kept making mistakes, and I was only 24, 25 years old. And then once 2007, 2008, we, you know, they had the big stock market crash. And I know it happened in UK. It was people in all over the world got affected by it. You know?
All over the world. Yeah.
All over the world. So then you had high unemployment and then I just couldn't hold on. I got involved with something called credit card. I know I don't make this whole, you can make this one whole thing, a whole other show, something called credit card factoring, basically where they give you upfront money based on your credit card sales. I think PayPal, they do this too. Like they used to take like money from your transactions and they would give you money or whatever.
You can get a loan and then pay it back. And
But by percentage of your sales.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's like a heroin because that's what happens is, when you get busier, you have to pay it back faster by virtue of more transactions because they're taking a piece. So then what happens is at the end, okay, you're paying it back. Then now you need more because it's like because it kills your cash flow. But that's a whole other thing. So that's when I left there. I went out of business. I went back to my old job and then I went back to college. I went back to college and then finished my degree. And then when I was in college, that's when I, you know, was watching some YouTube videos because I had already done eBay. And but I'd started out being like a lot of people here, a garage sale reseller, you know, and selling everything, you know, whatever you see. You go to a garage sale, you know, you see something, you buy it. And then, you know, you look it up or whatever it is. And at the time, when I first started selling, I didn't even have an app on my phone. Like there were times that I would like drive home and then look it up on my desktop, you know, and then see if it, you know. Then after a while, then I started niching down, which is something I recommend. You know, I'm sure you're going to ask me about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I definitely. So, all right. So what else?
What platforms are you operating on, Rob? What platforms do you sell on at the minute?
Yeah, right now is only eBay. I was doing some Facebook Marketplace.
Hate it.
A couple years ago.
The same problems as we have here in the UK. It's a bloody nightmare. It's like the Wild West on Facebook, right?
You mean just people, they say they're going to show up, they don't show up?
Idiots on that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I get a lot of that. But that's one of the reasons why I kind of stopped. And then also what happened is like they start doing like promoted listings now that they didn't do. So then now there's just like, in my opinion, this is just my personal opinion. As a buyer, I don't think it's a good buyer's experience. I don't think it's user friendly.
On eBay you're talking about.
No, I'm talking about on Facebook Marketplace.
Oh yeah, it's terrible.
Because some
terrible.
Yeah, just by the way where the listings are, it doesn't. I think eBay is a little bit better when you do the best match. You know, there. You know, when you click on boxes or whatever. I need an extra large used shirt. Or like, it's better at narrowing.
It works on Facebook.
Yeah, the other one.
You get all different results. You get results outside the area. You get results. It remembers what you search. And then every time you go on, you're flooded with the same stuff. And it doesn't even give you like the most recent listed stuff unless you do a special search on your desktop, you know.
Yeah, and then I'm trying, and then like then maybe maybe it was just me, I didn't give it enough time, but I'm uploading photos, right? And then I was using a desktop version, and I couldn't figure out how to rotate the photo. I'm like, how do they not have a rotate button? And I'm looking all over, and then I'm just like, you know what? Forget it. I'm just gonna stick on eBay.
It's not worth it.
You know. Yeah. So I'm just doing the eBay right.
They don't have the infrastructure on Facebook to like run a site like eBay. They just don't. And you know, until they start charging people for the service, then they'll never build it, will they? Because it costs so much money to build something like that.
Exactly. And to manage, to maintain, you know, to do all that. And they're already, it's like a side.
Because one of the things on Facebook is it's just not bloody safe, is it?
Oh, yeah. I remember you had a situation, you know.
Yeah. And totally, we got done. We got done on Facebook. Got done over. And luckily, my bank gave me the money back. But, you know, it's not the first time that we've almost, you know, lost money on there because there's so many scams. I mean, here in the UK, at the moment, I think the worst thing on Facebook is people selling cars on Facebook at really, really like competitively cheap prices. And it draws you in and you think that it's, you know, a great buy, but actually it's all just a scam and they're flooded with scams.
Yeah, I read something about that. They put prices low and then you send them a deposit, but then...
Yeah, it's a load of rubbish. You know.
But almost that's why a lot of people...
Almost every car you look at on Facebook, it's a scam.
Yeah, I tell people all the time anyway, when people want to try to negotiate, even when people, they message me, whatnot, like they want to negotiate price. I says, I don't... If it's something, a Facebook item, I says, look, I don't negotiate until I see you in person. You know? That's it. You know, if it's something like a vehicle, I'm talking, you know, obviously if it's a small item or something, but if it's something like a car, something where I have to hold it for you, where I can't, you know, it definitely, you know, so like I said, Facebook is good just to get your name out there, but it's not for selling the individual items. It's tricky.
And until they become more professional on Facebook, then it's no good. It's just no good at all. So on your eBay, Rob, I've seen your eBay before and I had another look today to see what kind of stuff you're selling. And it kind of goes along with your Instagram name, which is Bob's Blazers.
Yeah.
And you've got a lot of blazers on your eBay, haven't you? So is that something that you've become a bit of an expert in?
Okay, I just want to. I know how to flip this around. Do this real quick. So I have here. Don't mind the mess here, but you see here. You know.
So I got for anybody here, and then this is Rob is showing me a shit ton of blazers and jackets and suit jackets.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
Yeah, I got tons of stuff here. This is all like, you know, and obviously I haven't figured out some stuff. And then I'll show you real quick down here. You can see this. These are bins that I have of the stuff that's like the t-shirts and sweaters and stuff are in those bins.
Okay.
You know, so a basic, you know, like I'll have something like that. Like,
so are you pretty good with blazers and things then? Is that something that you actively look for in the thrift stores?
Yeah,
and stuff?
That is one of the main things. I mean, of course, like I'll show you, I'll pull up right here. Wait a second. Like, of course, you know, obviously I love the vintage t-shirts. You know, like I have this listed here. Like, this is a Harley Davidson t-shirt.
Yeah.
You know, this is made in USA. You know, this is a vintage. I don't know if you're familiar with the Grateful Dead, but their stuff is very popular. You know, the tie-dye.
Yeah. Nice.
T-shirts. But this stuff like this is very hard to find. Because there's so, I'm sure you see the channels, there's a million people trying to get vintage t-shirts, you know.
So where do you source most of your stock from then?
Well, let me finish with the other one. With so when I'm at the thrift store, I'm not looking at the t-shirts unless they're just coming out. If they're stuff that's been on the rack for a while, because we have people that camp out at the thrift stores, which I was one of them too. So the minute the rack comes out, you know, boom. But stuff like the suits, a lot of people don't want to sell suits, yeah, you know, and jackets and that kind of, because A, the sizing is difficult. You have to know the sizing, okay?
Yeah.
Because everything has been whatchamacallit, like, especially when you're dealing, you know, with pre-owned stuff. When you're dealing with
vintage sizing can be a nightmare, can't it?
But with the suits, the tricky part is stuff has been altered. So you kind of have to know like what it fits like. You know what I mean? So if something is like a size 42, but really now it fits like a 40, kind of have to know that. And that's why I do the measurements. It took a while, but in my case, that's better, because I have the knowledge. Like, for example, there are some, it's probably the best suits you can buy are their British suits from, you know, there's a specific area of London, which they call Savile Row, which, you know, if you can find, like if you just showed it to me, I could tell you exactly what it is. I could tell you which store it came from, which street it's on, even though I've never been anywhere near any of these places. But
so
I know right away.
You're a good expert on that kind of stuff. So I know now, if I find a blazer jacket, I'm messaging you on Instagram to find out what it is.
Oh, you should instantaneously, especially something like that. If you see made in UK, you know, made in USA, made, you know, that's definitely something, you know, but I'm just saying, like, sometimes a lot of stuff is what they call bespoke, which is kind of means like custom made for a person. Yeah. Like, yeah. But those are, they sell for tremendous money. Even if they're from the 80s or whatever it is, doesn't matter. Mm. They could sell for a ton of money. But a lot of people, they don't want to go for that stuff. And also, like I said, a lot of it, no matter what, even if you find a real cherry piece, it's still long tail. You know, I don't know, you know, so it's still, I have stuff that would take a year or two to sell. You know, it's not, I mean, a lot of people, they want to sell, like a video game, they want to list it and they want it sold by the next day. But with suits, it doesn't matter even if you drop the price, because it just has to be the right guy who wants the right suit. It has to have the right fit. Otherwise, it makes, you know, no matter lowering prices or promoted list, it's not going to help.
I guess. No, it doesn't matter. You just got to find that right buyer. So you just got to sit and wait, I guess. So do you find that your average sale price is quite high? Because I would imagine blazer jackets and stuff can be quite high value.
Yeah, I definitely have a higher from when I started and from when a lot of people, you know. I know a lot of people, their check average is like, I don't know, $20, $25. Mine is probably closer to $50.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
good.
I mean, because obviously I'm selling t-shirts too, but like I said, it takes a long time. I'm sorry?
A lot of vintage t-shirts, though, rather than sort of standard t-shirts.
Yeah, but like I said, the vintage t-shirts, they become very hard to find. Like I said, you'll go to the thrift store and there'll be half a dozen guys there just waiting. You know, I used to have a relationship with one lady where,
oh yeah,
I don't know if I told,
that's not that kind of,
I would have her. Well, it wasn't that kind of relationship. So she would text me when she's about to bring out the new merchandise.
Okay.
And then in return, I would help her put the stuff back on the shelves for her and on the racks.
All right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So we had a little relationship going. I said, look, I'll help you do your work, do your job, and then you help me, you know? And then, like everything else, and there's a lot more guys there showing up, and then I already have a lot of stuff, you know, so I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to run there early in the morning to, you know, to get stuff, you know, because it's already, you know, is it, like I said, there's a lot of guys there, and they're going for those t-shirts.
Yeah.
You know,
Chris Tyler on YouTube has got a question for you, Rob. Have you ever found anything interesting in a suit pocket?
Well, yeah, about, I don't know, 3-4 months ago, I found a wad of cash.
How much?
Yeah. About $400.
Whoa, no way.
Yeah. I was sweating and I was like, all right, you know, I got to go check out, you know, because always like one of the first things I do when you open it up, you have to inspect to see if there's any flaws. When you open it up, you look at the lining, you know, and then you look inside to see what the material, what it's made out of, you see. So then I could feel right away. I could just put my hand over it and I could feel that bulge. And there was like a wad of cash. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to the cash register right now, because it was just on the inside pocket. I'm like, I'm just going to go to the cash register right now. I'm not going to stay in the store longer in case one of the employees forgot to look or so, whatever. I don't know. Whatever it is. I went right to the register. I bought the suit, whatever it was, paid $20-25 for the suit. And then when I went to the car, I had no idea how much was in there, you know, because I wasn't about to take it out and then start count, you know. I just felt it.
You must have known. Even if it was dollar bills, it's going to be, you know, worth you picking it up.
Yeah. So that's what happened. So I just felt it. So I was like, well, I was going to buy the suit anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, I wasn't going to buy the suit.
Nice.
Yeah, I was going to buy it anyway. It was like $25.
Here's a question for you then. Are thrift stores the main places that you buy your stock, or have you got like wholesale contacts and stuff like that?
I would say it's pretty evenly distributed, maybe a little bit more on thrift stores, but the wholesaling, meaning like not just random people from online, you know,
mail order companies,
yeah, like some
wholesalers, and you know,
I think I mentioned this to you too before. I mean, if there's anybody listening, especially if you're in the UK, there is a tremendous financial opportunity if you're willing to work hard, and you really want to make money. There's nobody doing. Everybody I talk to, there's nobody that does estate sales. Nobody.
Everyone
says, well, you know, and they don't do estate sales.
Oh, estate sales. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's who my people are, who I'm buying a lot of stuff from. Because remember, when items are at the, they're in the house first before they get to the thrift store, there's already been like five hands that have touched the merchandise before they even get to the thrift store.
Right.
So like I have one woman in particular. I don't know if you ever heard me talk about her name is Leslie. And she has the estate sale company. And I kind of almost do the same thing with her once in a while. So people who either they pass away and you know, the people who inherit the estate, or a lot of people here downsize. I'm sure people in UK do the same thing. You know, maybe they retire and then they go to Spain or something, or they go to, you know, there's other.
We have house clearances here, which is probably the same thing, like a house clearance.
Coaching Conversation 2024. This podcast is 100% dedicated to leadership and leadership within the workplace coaching area. We work with companies throughout the world teaching leaders how to coach their employees. This podcast is dedicated to teaching specific strategies, frameworks, coaching models, and now artificial intelligence strategies to help leaders drive greater teamwork, collaboration, cooperation, greater attitudes, better motivation, coaching career development, just to name a few. I hope you'll check out our podcast.
Yeah, but they don't let people in. As far as I've been told,
I've been to a couple where someone's died and the family have basically said everything in the house is for sale. And you just wander around. Yeah.
But it just seemed like other people I've spoken to, there's just not that many.
There isn't many. Like, there isn't.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, like for example, there's a, well, let me finish with this other woman, Leslie, real quick.
Yeah.
You know, she'll go into the house. You know, she has a, you know, she knows a lot about jewelry, this, that, and everything. And I'll help her set up for the sale that she's about to do. And then she'll set up for the sale. I'll help her up. I'll bring racks and set up clothing. But then she'll let me get first pick of the clothing. In lieu of, you know, obviously I'm not getting paid. I'm buying it from her, but I'm able to go in and then look through items first. Cause that's the whole key, is that you want to get in there first. You want to get in there early. You know,
yeah.
You want to get there when the stuff first comes out. That's what I tell a lot of people. You know, I noticed that, you know, not just UK, I'm not just picking on UK. You know, American YouTube, the same thing. Like the good items, you're never going to find the great items just sitting there on the rack. It's always there because there's a million guys looking for stuff, you know. But like I said, so she'll call me up ahead of time. Or a lot of times, let's say the stuff didn't sell at the sale. And it's a lot different than like a thrift store. A thrift store can let a jacket sit there for a month or whatever. It doesn't matter. You know, they'll just let it sit. But these sales, these estate sales, more often than not, the home is already sold. So they have a new person coming in to take over the house. So they have to get the place cleared out.
Right.
So there's a lot of pressure on them. So like, you know, and when these companies, when you keep buying from them off over and over and over again, they'll call you ahead of time and they'll say, look, Rob, I got something for you. Because she, like one time she called me up. She's like, I need you to make it up to an area that's near the Bronx, but a wealthy area, you know. Not where the stadium. So she was like, look, I need you to get here in a half an hour. So I had a sandwich in my mouth. I put the sandwich, I wrapped it up and I got in the car because that's how it is. It's like, well, when the trucks are outside, you always want to get it just before, you know, because maybe they're going to donate the rest of the stuff. Maybe they're going to whatever, but then you go there, especially like when she deals with only, you know, high end areas, you know?
Yeah.
So that's always my thing. I look
Rob, for you to put your sandwich down and go. I mean, that must be, you know, must be serious. That.
And I joke with her. I'm like, I said, you know, I flirt with her a little bit, you know. And I says, Leslie, you're the only woman that I'll wake up that if I see the phone ringing and it's before 7, 8 a.m. Otherwise, if the phone wakes me up, I'll just, you know, hit the button and, you know, go back to sleep. But because, you know, I'm not a morning guy. I'm from the restaurant business. But when she calls me up, if she has something, if I see her phone and it's 8 o'clock in the morning, I know it's something
you're gonna
good.
Have to get up.
Yeah. I get up. She's the only one I'm getting up for. You know, that's it.
In the UK,
but there's a lot of opportunity.
In the UK, estate sales, they don't happen that often, but they do get advertised a lot on like Facebook and stuff. But what tends to happen is that companies come in and clear the house out for you know, they'll just come in and take everything, like one company.
Yeah, but aren't they charging to take the stuff away?
I don't know if they charge to take it. They may charge something, or they may take it for free in exchange for keeping the stuff or for clearing the house. And then you see those guys, like we call them the house clearance guys. And then you see them at the boot sales, like, and you see, they'll just get boxes full of stuff out of someone's house and plonk it on the floor and you just root through it. So, I think most estate sales tend to go that way, you know?
Yeah, we have that too. We have a guy called Undercutters. They're called Undercutters Junk Removal, you know, because what they're doing is they're taking all the stuff to the flea market, you know, as you know, boot sale. Okay, so all right.
We've got a question from Andrew on YouTube, Monumental UK, who says, who are your reselling inspirations, bearing in mind he's banned from drinking with Andrew, if he doesn't say Andrew?
Oh, yes, definitely. Andrew is definitely an inspiration. He's an inspiration in different ways.
But who do not you like reselling. Watching most on YouTube? You know, who do you watch a lot of resellers on YouTube? Who do you like?
One of the original people that I started watching, who I got a lot of knowledge out of, his name is Peter. He goes by the name of the Craigslist Hunter, which is kind of outdated because people really don't use Craigslist anymore. But you familiar with him?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's American, but you know, he's a Polish naturalized citizen, you know. He lives near Chicago, which is a large Polish community. He moved here 20, 30 years ago. And but for example, he's very good at explaining how much time it takes to do things, how to do it right. If you need a general knowledge of reselling, he's definitely out of course, and also how to negotiate with people. He's very good at negotiating. And also I would, you know, just little things like letting merchandise come to you. You know, like I said, like with this other woman, Leslie, you know, have her calling me. It's easier when the stuff comes to you rather than you running out and chasing stuff. What I mean? When you're getting the call. That's, you know,
not easy to get a contact like that, though, is it? It's not easy.
But what I want to say is you have to plant the seeds. Like, for example, if you were saying, I want to get in that house clearance business to estate sales, excuse me, you have to become friends with the realtors. I don't know. When people sell homes, do most people do for sale by owner or they use a realtor?
In the UK, they're estate agents, but yeah, most people use an estate agent.
We call it a realtor. So to make friends, you want to make good friends with those realtors because those people, they're the ones trying to get that deal done. And they need somebody right away to get that stuff out because, they always need people, and then when you're Johnny on the spot, I got to get this house, you know, because sometimes the house has a ton of stuff and they got to get the stuff out quick because they can't even show the house if there's too much stuff. So when you're Johnny on the spot and they call you at 7 a.m., you say, I'll be right there. You know, I'll be there right away.
Surely though, most of the time they won't want somebody coming in just cherry picking stuff. They want someone to come in and take the bloody lot.
Well, yeah, of course, but I'm just saying, just in a general sense, those are people. But the point, like, you foster those relationships.
Yeah,
you know, and that's why a lot of times I bought lots from people that I was like, look, I'm only going and buying the lot, which is kind of a bad habit to buy too much stuff. But I bought stuff where I'm just like, you know what, I'm buying it because I want to keep that relationship. Because guess what, if you call and say, oh, you know what, I have a lot of stuff already, they're calling the next guy. And then that next guy is going to become their new guy. I'll be right.
Yeah. No, that's good. Let's talk about like the city, like New York City, like Manhattan and that.
Okay.
So you mentioned before that you do occasionally go in. How do you go about sort of thrifting or, you know, buying to resell in the city?
Well, yeah, when I say, when I go to three, well, I'm talking more about Queens and Brooklyn, that are the outer boroughs.
Just on the outer boroughs.
Correct. Like, for example, the your Goodwill bins, which you have been to, right? I mean, you were in Florida.
I don't like it.
Yeah, I know. Well, but guess what? Especially the more, what do you call it? Dodgy? Is that the term that you guys use?
Dodgy, yeah. Depending on what context you're going to use it in.
Yeah, well, the dodgier, if you call a neighborhood or a place dodgy, you know.
Sketchy.
Sketchy. So but there's a risk reward. If you go into places that are sketchier, there's more reward, you know, because other people don't want to go. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
Like, I go to one of the, there's a place, like I said, also outside of Manhattan Island, but it's still New York City, a very bustling area, very busy. There's some Spanish areas, okay, Hispanic, a lot of people from, you know, south of the border, we call it, you know.
Yeah.
And I have experience speaking Spanish because when you work in the restaurant business, most of the workers, they speak Spanish.
Yeah.
You know, they come from, you know, south of the border. So I'm used to communicating with them, and I know their culture, and I know how to speak with them and communicate with them, that a lot of people, you know, a lot of like, you know, white Americans wouldn't know how to communicate with them, you know, but I can start talking to them, and then they don't, like, for example, they're not going to know rock t-shirts. They're not going to know, if I showed them a picture of the Rolling Stones, they wouldn't know, you know. Like, I got one, I wish I had the picture of it, but I got one Nirvana, it had a big Kurt Cobain t-shirt, right, with a big face on it, you know. And I got like 200, it's probably worth more now, but I got like 5 years ago. And I bought it from a woman in a small thrift store, Spanish-speaking woman. Paid like $2 because she's not going to know.
You can't make that generalization. She might know. She might love a bit of, you know, Kurt Cobain or whatever.
I would bet my life on it.
Okay.
But that's what I'm saying. But a lot of people, they're not going to go into those places because if they don't speak the language and they don't know how, you know, and this place, and it's funny because I was just having the same conversation with another guy that I know from the area. He goes to places that are super sketchy, where, you know, it's, you know, way worse than the place. Like, I'm just going to places where people really don't speak English. He's going to places where it's dangerous, where it's actual, you're putting your life in danger. You know what I mean?
The thing is, though, Rob, in Brooklyn, right, you say that the sketchy areas are good places to go because people don't know what they've got on the shelves. But on the flip side, the sketchy areas, like, say, the poorer areas, does it not just have the clothing and items that are not these guys, good quality?
Listen, my friend just sent me this picture, and I don't know if Scott is still in here, I showed him. This guy was like, he showed me the table, right? My friend who went to this place in Brooklyn, and there's like World War II memorabilia, which is probably banned on eBay. Okay. Like, stuff that you're like, how do these people have passports from guys from the Third Reich? Okay.
Right.
Like, how would they have this? Right. And then another guy had, you know what Tiffany is? I don't know if they have stores in London too.
Yeah.
But
top end brand.
They have in London. Yeah, like they have in New York. It's a famous brand. The guy's looking at Tiffany silverware.
How does that end up in a thrift store?
I'm telling you, in
the sketchy areas.
Listen, I told you. Even the place where I was, in the area which is not really sketchy, but it's just like I said, it's just a migrant area. But it's not like, I'm not afraid to park my car there. It's not like it's not dangerous per se.
Yeah,
but I got game worn jerseys, NBA basketball players with game worn jerseys.
Nice.
You know, like you said, you're like, how do they end up over there? You know what I mean? There's a lot of stuff like that. I was told you, I found some men's suits, custom made stuff from Italy, but like, it's good because they're not going to know those names. Like, I mean, everybody knows Gucci and Burberry and Polo, like, you know, but there's a lot of other brands that people, they're just not going to know. You know, they're just rare stuff. And then but like I said, the stuff he's showing me, rare antiques and stuff like that. And I mean, you know, places that there's, you know, graffiti on the walls and there's, like I said, I'm like, it's even a little sketchy for me. And you know what I mean? Because if you make the wrong turn, you're really in the dangerous part, you know, but this guy, I mean, he was in the war in Iraq and, you know, people shooting at you, you know, so like, he's okay. He's fine to go
he's
there.
Right,
you know what I mean?
He's okay with it.
Yeah. He knows how to use weapons, you know? So, but like I said, but you have to do that sometimes because like when we go to, like, we have this one big thrift store, it's called Savers. I don't know if you, did you see that down in Florida?
No, I didn't see any in Florida, but I know of it.
So, but that's like a busy thrift store, whatever it is. It's like a corporate thrift store. They have chain, you know, many locations. So like a lot of people just camp out there. They just, that's like kind of their home base. You know what I mean? And then, you know, but like I said, there might be a dozen people there that are looking for stuff. So, yeah. You know what? So, but a lot of people don't want to go to the sketchy. So much competition.
Reselling.
Yeah. So I know. And Chris, I thought the same thing you did. You're like, how do places, if it's a poor area, how do they end up? But
it just does. It just seems to end up there.
Because they're getting stuff from storage lockers. They're getting stuff from who knows where these people are getting this stuff. It's shocking. It's not just the poor people's stuff. But anyway, so you want to ask another question?
Yeah, we'll move on to something different. Tell us about where you are. Right, I mean, assuming you showed me you're in your stock area, your office area. So what kind of business premises are you in? Where you're operating from?
Yes. So upstairs from me, where we are here, upstairs is a thrift store. It's a mom and pop thrift store, though. Okay.
What does that mean?
It's not corporate. It's not Savers. It's not a chain.
Is it a profit making thrift store or is it a charity?
It's profit making.
Yeah.
And but people still drop off stuff because they just don't even want to bring it to other. They're just like, they just leave stuff. There's a lot of people. It's the same thing. Like you say, where do people get this stuff? People will just drop stuff off because they feel it's better for the community anyway. Because instead of throwing it in the garbage, somebody from the community can get a pair of jeans for $3. You know what I mean? Yeah. So not necessarily, but because you know what, a lot of these charities anyway. Like they call it like the goodwill. Mm. When you actually look at their bottom line,
I know what you're gonna say. I've heard it before. You know, the big bosses are earning mega bucks, aren't they?
Yeah. They have CEOs, they have presidents, they have this, they have executives that they're making.
Doesn't matter to me. I'll happily buy from, you know, a thrift store that's just a family business, you know, as well as charities. It doesn't matter to me, you know, probably get better deals, to be fair.
Yeah, so she obviously doesn't get, you know, huge stuff because she's not a lot of these other bigger places. They send trucks out to pick up stuff, so they get tons of stuff. She just gets just from, like you said, just from this community, people, they just drop stuff off. So, but
you're in the basement,
I used to buy from her. Correct. So I used to buy from her once in a while. You know, I would stop here. I mean, I live 5 minutes away, in, you know, car. So I would stop once in a while here, and then she was using this room as like a storage room for her stuff, but she just had half of it was some boxes and this and that. You know, it wasn't even that much stock. So I told her, I says, look, I'll rent it from you. And this was probably this was before COVID, so it was probably maybe a year or so before COVID. So I decided, you know, so I rent the store from her. And it's a good deal. It's a good deal for both ends. I'm getting a very fair price. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, she needs somebody. She can't just rent it to anybody because I have to go. I have keys for the store. I have to go through the store through all the.
She's got to trust you. So she can't.
Exactly. Like when I see, like I'll see merchandise outside and it will start to rain and I'll bring the stuff in that people leave, you know, from outside that donate, whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like I said, she's got to find somebody honest and responsible to make sure to remember to lock the doors, you know, to check, you know, I mean, I got to. Yeah. So it works out better. And she's a nice lady. You know, we get along well. People always say, you're buying stuff from her? I'm like, yeah, I really do once in a while. But she really doesn't have, like, you know, she doesn't really get like the stuff that I'm buying.
Yeah.
You know,
but occasionally
and she sells some
something that's worth picking up.
Occasionally, and she sells some stuff for her. You know, if there's something that's really good, she's going to sell it online herself. You know what I mean? It's not like it's a big corporation. You know, she just, you know, she sees something that comes in, she's going to list it and sell it. But we have a very good relationship, you know.
That's good.
Yeah.
I was going to talk to you. When we was in New York, we went to one of the outlet malls and we got some great bargains. The one at, I've written it down because I didn't want to forget, Woodbury.
Woodbury Commons, is that where you went?
I don't know. Woodbury Outlet is where we went. And it's got like Calvin Klein and places like that.
Yeah, that's north. Yeah, that's north of the city. That's right. That's north of the city. That's not like, the river. The Hudson River goes like this way, and then the island, Long Island, goes this way.
Right.
And then this is up there, and I'm out here.
Okay.
You know, I'm out on the It's kind of tricky because we're on an island. We're stuck. You know what I mean? We can't really. It's hard to get to the mainland USA. But it doesn't matter because we're so populated here that there's enough stuff here. You know, we have so many people living here that it's easy enough.
Do you ever source from like the outlets or do you ever source brand new stuff rather than secondhand?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do have. I was going to show you. I can't find it now, but we do have like I know you guys call it TK Maxx, but it's TJ Maxx here and Marshall's. So
that's another one. Ross.
Ross, we only have a couple of Ross stores here. I really haven't bought anything from Ross in my region in Long Island. We don't have a Ross. We have another one called Burlington, but we have a lot of Marshalls and TJ Maxx. But they really only like I did buy a lot of stuff. Right after Christmas, they put a lot of stuff on clearance. But in usual times, I usually don't go in there because they just don't. You know, they just don't. I might have it here. Look here. I have tickets here, just as you're speaking here. You see like this? Can you read that here? It says Marshall. So what they do is you could see all these this tick sticker.
Exactly the same. Exactly the same as what happens here at TK Maxx.
Yeah. So now it says like this is like the third sticker at $59. So but during the regular year, they usually don't drop that much. They usually. You know, people buy it. They don't usually have that much left on clearance. So, but stuff like that. But even in here, like this is a tag from another thrift store.
Okay,
sold as is. That's from another corporate kind of corporate thrift store chain. But you know, just different here. So this one here is not yellow, but it's 59. It was, you know, compared 360. They were selling for 170, and now it was 60. You know what I mean? You have to
have these. They have these big like RRPs, don't they, on the tags. It's like RRP 399 and then we're selling it in the UK, TK Maxx for £99 and then it'll have a sale ticket on it for £49. You know, that's how it is.
Yeah, but then again, you have to remember this too. That's another thing too, is that when they're doing that at your TJ Maxx, TK Maxx, whatever it is, you gotta be very careful, make sure to do your homework because they're doing that at those stores all over the country. So now a lot of people say, wow, it's on clearance. But sometimes it's just like if there's just too many of them, even if the price is great, eBay is flooded with them. There's nothing you can do about it. What are you going to do? You know, you're not going to sell them because there's just too many. So you kind of have to like, it's the waiting game. You have to leave yourself a lot of room, you know?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah, it is difficult. But Dave on YouTube here, Dave ABL Reselling, has got a really good comment. And he says, I wonder if a thrift store would work in the UK, you know, like an independent thrift store rather than a charity. They do have them. I mean, Dave, you must have seen some, but I've seen some like there's a few here in Rhyl where we live that are just independent like thrift stores and they sell secondhand stuff and I'd love to. I think if I was ever going to have like a shop premises, I would have like a unit that would be like a thrift store, just full of all different stuff. But it would be obviously my business rather than a charity.
See, because that's another thing. Well, what Savers does, what we were just talking about, they're not a charity. You know that, right?
Yeah.
So what they do, you know that? Okay.
Yeah.
So, but what they... Oh, so in case anybody who, you know, you're curious how Savers works, they buy from the charities. So what happens is they have weigh stations in the back of the store. So they have different organizations. Like they have one that's called Big Brothers, Big Sisters. I don't even know what the heck they do. But they buy from, this company, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, they have trucks that go around and people, you know, they pick up the donations, whatever it is. And, what Savers will do, they buy their merchandise for about 25 cents a pound.
Okay.
And I know it sounds weird. 25 cents a pound. I know you guys use kilo, whatever. I don't know, whatever you use.
It's next to nothing, isn't it?
But obviously, you know what I'm talking about. You know, 25 cents, a pound is a half a kilo, you know, for anybody who's, or just about. You know, and 25 cents is not like it's nothing. So they're buying.
Yeah. 20p.
Yeah. Yeah. 20p. So for a half a kilo of merchandise, which is nothing, you know. Yeah. But that's what they're doing. But they're buying, of course, you know, tonnage. You know what I mean? They're buying thousands of pounds. But that's what they do. Or if you like, they do on their overhead speaker. When you're in the store, they're like, oh, are you having a fundraiser for an organization? Please talk to the manager. And, you know, we can buy, you know, they'll buy it from you if you're doing some type of fundraising, you know, whatever it is, they pay 20, like I said, 20 to 30 cents for the poundage, you know, but that's not a bad idea, you know, but that's tough.
Question for you then. You sometimes message me when you find football or soccer shirts, as you call them out there.
Yes.
And you seem to find loads of soccer shirts, like UK and obviously around the world soccer shirts, probably more than I even see at the local boot sales here in the UK. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So how come you seem to get all these football soccer shirts? It's mad how many you get.
Like I said, you know, I find
is this the Hispanic sort of, they're not sure about what they are or.
No, and this one, this is the one, I think I sent you a picture. I wasn't sure if it was authentic because I know a lot of times these Adidas ones are faked. But then I sent it to another guy because it had, I'll show you the picture, but this one here, especially they do better if they have a name on the back.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they do much better. And this was the one I told you where that lady used to let me, it still has the little pinhole through it. The lady where I used to help her put her merchandise away. And then she would let me get in early. This is I got so I only paid $1.99. So what?
Oh, bargain.
You know, £1.50 or whatever. You know, so that for this jersey, bargain. You know, it's just you know, like I said, you know, you could find that stuff. I mean, that's not a great one. I mean, it's a cheaper jersey, you know, but stuff like that, you know, those come out all day long. You know what I mean? And she only charged me the t-shirt price. And then here, I just found like this one here. I thought this was. That's cool, right?
Yeah. Is it Ralph Lauren? Can't quite see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's nice. I can see it.
It has the crest.
Yeah. Nice.
You know, the England.
They always do well. The ones that have got the countries and cities on them always do well with the Ralph Lauren's.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a flea market find. Like I said, one of the ladies from the flea market, you know, and like I said, sometimes she was like, oh, I'm going to get some stuff on Monday night at 6 p.m. Come meet me at this other location. You know, she has her suppliers that she gets stuff from. Oh, look who it is. Picking for a living
on YouTube here says soccer is very popular in New York because we have a lot of immigrant communities here. Also, you have two soccer teams, which I was going to talk about very quickly. New York City FC, which is the team that I like to follow in the US because they are connected to Manchester City, who is my team.
Yeah.
And you got the Red Bulls as well. So do you follow the soccer at all?
Well, Red Bulls are not here. Red Bulls are in New Jersey.
They're kind of New York.
No, in New Jersey. No, but I'm saying, they're in New Jersey. I went to the stadium one time. It was a terrible experience because they're logistically the place where they put the stadium logistically with the transportation is a disaster. I didn't go there to see them. I went there to see Bayern Munich. I had a friend of mine who's I went the year they had the World Cup that they all the Germans were not there. They were all still playing in the cup. They were still playing. But I got to see a few of the guys that were still on the team. Like, this is the first year Robert Lewandowski was on the team.
Right.
And, they played a team called Chivas de Guadalajara. Right. And, very intense fans, you know, but like, I don't even watch it anymore because I don't have that. My friend, you know, because after COVID, we got different work and we're doing different jobs and doing this. We're not working in the restaurant anymore. So it's kind of like now, because soccer is not on football. It's not on. I mean, it is on TV. You can get, if you have the right channels, they made it also very, I'm sure they did the same thing in the UK. In the last 5 years or so, everything is different with different apps and different this and different that. It used to be a lot easier, like on our regular cable television channels, to get games to like the, basically, I mean, mostly we would just watch a Champions League because the Champions League is on in the afternoon, you know, because obviously you're not going to wake up and watch morning games, you know, but only hardcore fans are going to do that. But we'd watch a lot of Champions League, you know, those games, you know, because my friend, we'd go to different bars and stuff. We'd go to the Irish bars because the Irish like soccer. So they would usually make sure to have, they would make sure to have those special channels.
They have the sport on, don't they? Yeah, they have the sport on. Yeah, I, so believe, I believe that New York City, though, New York City FC, someone said to me that they're classed more as New York than the Red Bulls because they are actually closer to New York. Is that right?
Well, they're in New York. They play, like I said, the New York City has the five boroughs. You know, they have Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan, Staten Island. They play, as far as I know, they're still playing at Yankee Stadium. I don't know if they're changing.
They're having a new stadium built, but I think it's directly next door to the Yankee Stadium.
That's in the Bronx. That's New York City proper. The Red Bulls play in a place called Harrison, New Jersey. They play on the other side of the river, and it's like an hour away from it. A lot of stuff gets built here. It's corruption. Somebody wants something built somewhere and somebody does somebody a favor. And cause you know what it is, they always want to show like, oh, look, we're creating new jobs and creating this and creating that. But it's just somebody who's, you know, they'll say, oh, I'll let you build whatever you want. You don't need permits or anything. Yeah, just build it, you know. But like on regular TV, I wouldn't even know how to find any of these games on television, to be honest. You know, this, like I said, more people, if I walked around here, it's more likely I would find somebody with a Ronaldo jersey or a Messi jersey nobody's following the New York.
Messi is Miami. So he's,
a lot of people, when I go to the flea market, you'll see tons of those pink jerseys that they wear, you know, the Miami team, whatever, you know, I'm sure, you know, that color, that pink or whatever it is. That you'll see those all over the place, you know, people are wearing those, you know, but obviously I'm not picking them up because I know they're all fakes.
There's so many fakes. They're too new. It's really hard, you know, to get around them. There's a lot of fakes. Right. We're coming to the end, Rob. And you know how us Brits like to keep to our timings. I've got three questions though. I've got three questions before we finish. The first question for you is, what is your best or most unusual find?
Yeah, I probably think, which I showed you the picture, the
I'll put a picture on the screen for those watching.
Okay, right there. That is not just any ordinary basketball jersey. That's a New York Knicks. That's the famous team that plays in Times Square in New York City at the Madison Square Garden, the world's most famous arena. And that he was a player, not a very popular. I mean, he was a decent player, but this is a game worn jersey.
Ooh, nice.
And you could see, you'll see on there, on the one tag, it will say game issue. And that's what that means. And you could tell right away, like I found that at one of those small thrift stores, like I said, from that lady I bought the Kurt Cobain t-shirt from.
Yeah.
That she wouldn't know that this is a game worn. Like she just would have no idea. But of course I got very lucky. I found it. And you could see also body length, you know, basketball players are always very tall. So they're very, you know, they're very long jersey. But that one, I undersold it, but I think I want to get about $600 for it.
Ooh, how much did you pay for it?
I could have got a few bucks. I mean, she didn't, like I said, she, it wasn't, you got, you know, she'd had
more. And you paid a couple of dollars.
Oh yeah, but like I said, and if this is, you know, in one of those communities I bought it from, you know, she's not gonna know what that is. And, you know, and it also, it was a lot of work finding it because it's one of those places where I got to take a pic. You'll get a kick out of this because your stores are organized with shelf. Right? This is just one. She has just giant piles of clothing and you have to dig through the piles of clothing. Right. Like the pile is higher than my head. So, but you have to like dig and then hopefully you can't pull something at the bottom. There'll be an avalanche all over the place. But but the thing is the game worn stuff. It's the same thing with the football, soccer, you know, their jerseys are not the same as the ones that you're getting. And when you put your hand on it, when you put your hand, you know, right away that it's the real one. Like, it's just like, you can tell. So when I felt it, I was like, oh my God. And then I just paid for it right away. Same thing. And then I took off. And I was like, wow, I knew right away what I had. And just like I said, you can look this. And also when you flip it up inside out, the stitching is meticulous. Mm. You know what I mean? It's perfect. There's no like, it's not like machine stitched where it's like, you know, it's crooked and, you know, whatever. But that
that's
was a
nice
great find.
That though, that's a really nice find for a couple of dollars. Yeah. You can't argue with that, can you?
Yeah. Yeah,
right. Next question for you, Rob, is have you got a goal for yourself for this year, for this coming year?
Yeah, this year I definitely want to expand on another platform. I always go back and forth all the time with Etsy or with Poshmark or whatever it is, or even I know people doing Whatnot. I want to dip my toes in the water and try to do some different, you know, I keep saying it because I'll talk to one guy and I'll say, oh, how are you doing on Etsy? And they'll say, oh, Etsy is good. Then the next guy's like, oh, you know what? Just focus on eBay.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I'm really considering trying to spread out because also, you know what it is too? I also get scared like everybody else. Like a lot of people, they have their account shut down on eBay for no reason or, you know, I know Nick and Andrea, they went through some kind of issues with their account, you know.
You could, even if your account doesn't get shut down, you could lose it for a couple of weeks while they sort a problem out, you know.
Yeah, so that's another thing that gets me concerned is that it's like, well, I have all this stuff and then I can't sell it or they can't send me the money or some. So it's like, I want it just as a backup, you know,
and
even
also,
if it's not, but I have to figure.
If you think about it, like when you're just on one platform, you're subjected to the ups and downs of that platform. So one day's great, the next day's shit. But when you've got two platforms, when one's down, the other one might be up. So you can kind of help sort of flatten the roller coaster a little bit, you know?
Sure. Absolutely.
So so you're hoping to I'm gonna check in with you in a few months and see which platform you've gone into. I'm gonna test
or that. to break my chops and say you gotta get it. You told this is your New Year's resolution.
Kick your ass. Third question for you, Rob, is do you have any tips or words of wisdom for your fellow resellers out here?
Yeah, I'll just go back to the two things that I'm trying to say. A, make those relationships, you know, those people who do those clearance or whatever it is, you know, definitely do that. You know, the relationships are so much better than trying to chase. And don't be afraid, go to some areas like, be like, oh, like you thought, and I thought too, you know, like, oh, what kind of good stuff are they going to have in those dodgy areas. But you know, sometimes you say like, oh, they're not going to have anything there, but a lot of times they do have stuff, you know, especially like if it's, you know, like I said, if it's sketchy or if it's people who you don't really know them, no one's going to go there. They have stuff there and they just don't, a lot of times people, they don't know that other woman is not going to know that Kurt Cobain t-shirt, but it's in a pile of, if she's getting stuff from donations, you know, she's not going to know. She's just going to say, here, $2, $2. Okay, here's $2. You know, don't be afraid. Go to, because I know, like I said, the one thing that kind of always gets me when I see a lot of people, especially like I said, the UK, they'll go into these well manicured thrift stores or, you know, charity shops, whatever you call them. You know, the carpet is freshly, vacuumed and the racks are perfect. And it's like, you know what? When the store is so organized, I'm going to have to show you the picture of this other, that other little small one. the lady, the Hispanic lady, that she had, and where you have to dig through the pile, because a lot of people are not going to dig through a pile of stuff. And a lot of,
yeah,
just to get in the store is not easy. I mean, because you have to walk through. I mean, you're going through stuff, and then all of a sudden, there's a guy has a beer there. You know, like you find, you know, like
sometimes the best, like the best thrift stores are, or the best charity shops, like, are the ones, yeah, that you walk in and everything is just a tip. It's just not organized at all.
Yeah, they're playing like Mexican ranch, they call it ranchero music. It's like with this brass. It's like just loud music, and you're just like, you know, you have no idea. They're watching these novella shows on TV, and they're blasting it, and they have a baby crying. They have a dog barking in the store. You know,
I mean, they haven't, I know, got time, it sounds, to carry pick and sell on eBay.
Yeah, they're not. They're having arguments in the store. Yeah, they're talking to their family that's in El Salvador on the, you know, on like this, you know, whatever it is. They're not thinking about eBay, or they have no idea. They're just like, yeah, $10, $5, you know.
Yeah.
And then but you just, and also, yeah, you know, and one other thing too is, like I said, with the personal relationships, don't be afraid to be gentle. I see a lot of people make this mistake. They try to get rough, especially with, you know, they want to get rough with these ladies, you know, like, oh, come on, like, do $5, you know, not 10. Come on. It's too, you know,
yeah.
If they want to sell it to you for the lower price, they will. Getting rough with people, because then they don't want to, they're not going to call. Like I said, that one of the lady who, I let her just give me a price. And then if it's too high, I'll just give her a look and I'll be like, you know, I don't think I'm going to do well. I'll tell her why I'm not going to be able to get so much. I say, you know what? This is the old label. I don't think I'm going to be able to get a lot of money for it. And then if they understand, they'll come down. But if you're, yeah, like, someone's like, oh, $100, like, I'll give you 50. They get turned off, and then they just, yeah, you know, you got to know how, it's to, like, be gentle with them.
Negotiate, but nicely, you know, in a nice way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not, yeah, exactly. Nicely. But you can be firm, but just, you have to have a because when you want to buy something for less, I always say, tell people this, like when they're you know, when they're dealing with it, have a reason why you think it's worth 50 and not 100.
That's a
not
good
just
point.
Like, I don't, because a lot of times people are like, I'll give you 50. If you go back to it and say, you know what, maybe you didn't watch this. When you were pricing this item, maybe you didn't notice that it has a little crack on the bottom. You know what? I might have to get it fixed. You know, you could always find something wrong with anything. Yeah. You know, maybe when, and you'll say it like this. You say it to them, make them, you know, get them out of it.
You're not criticizing that stuff.
Maybe you overlooked this mustard stain. You know what I mean? Maybe you overlooked it when you were making your price. And then once they see a flaw in it, even if it's a minor insignificant flaw, it's like they feel obligated. Okay, now I got to go to 70. All right, let's meet in the middle, 75.
Yeah.
Instead of just like bullying. Bullying doesn't work.
Yeah, it's not what you say, it's how you say it, isn't it?
I knew a guy, we could do a whole nother show. I have a guy who knows how to just, it's like Shakespearean. It's like poetry. He knows how to speak to people. And then he just got a guy to like drop his price. And I'm like, John, how did you... You know, but just some people have that. They know how to,
totally
communicate.
Totally. Thank you, Rob. It's been fascinating chatting to you about your life and thrifting and New York and all that stuff. It's been really interesting. And I very much appreciate you taking the time to come on our podcast.
Yeah, I'll put that. I have if somebody wants to contact me, especially if somebody, let's say somebody in the UK, and they're saying, well, I found this beautiful men's sport coat, blazers, you know, suit, and they want to know something about it. I'm at Bob's Blazers and Vintage. I don't know, maybe somebody, if you can put a link or something or whatever, if you want.
I'll put a link underneath on the thing. Yeah.
And I had a show Yes, that's on Instagram. And then I had a show on YouTube it was on the Flippin' Goodies channel. And I was a co-host with the other gentleman that was on Dumpster Diving Dad.
Oh, yeah.
He was a co-host on the show. And what was it saying? So we just put the show on hiatus. not totally. We haven't done the show live stream with the three of us. We haven't done the show in a couple of months. But if you want, I mean, I don't know if anybody wants to go back and watch the old ones. But if you want to maybe subscribe to it, or I'll let you know, and I'm sure you'll be more than
you
happy
never
to
know.
Promote it.
You know, you might come back and you know, do another show in the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Right.
But the Instagram is what I usually check. So if somebody finds something, or if you find vintage t-shirts, somebody wants to know, oh, does this look original? Be, you know, just whatever it is. If you just say you're friends with Chris, then you're a friend of mine.
Excellent. Thank you, Rob. I appreciate it. Right. Thank you, everybody, for watching here on YouTube. And thank you if you are listening on Apple Music, Alexa, or Google, or what else? Spotify. Appreciate your listening. If you do take the time just to give us a quick review on one of those channels, that would be great, because that helps a lot. And we are done for today. Thanks again, Rob, and everybody else watching. I appreciate it. And we'll speak to you again soon, and we'll see you on the next podcast.
Take care, everybody.
That's it for today's episode of the Everything Reselling Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. Don't forget to like, to follow, or to subscribe wherever you're watching or listening to this podcast. And we'll see you on the next episode.